Okay, our first speaker is named Jack. My name is Jack, and let's welcome our main speaker, Jack.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm the real Jack. I want to thank my friend Michelle for inviting me to participate in the meeting tonight. I want to thank Jack for his talk, and I want to congratulate the people who celebrated various lengths of sobriety. It was a special treat for me tonight to give my friend Randall a cake. He and I go back a long time, and it was really a thrill to see him take his cake up here tonight. I really should tell you that Charlie C. was scheduled to speak tonight, and I found that out today. The only reason I mention it, I wouldn't ordinarily mention it, is because I want the forgiveness of those of you who I said earlier in the week to be there Friday night. It's going to be a great speaker. Style, so I needed to explain that, and it's a very strange thing to get up and talk, because especially at this meeting, I just want to remind those of you who may be considering this right now. You probably have heard me, criticize speakers and put them down. That was wrong of me. It's the strangest thing. I've done a huge turnaround. I've been so full of love toward all speakers, and I just felt that way when I came into the meeting tonight. I felt so close to so many people, so many people I've heard recently. I felt so good, I really wanted to get up there and take the greeting commitment tonight, but I didn't go that far. Another day. I guess if I was still drinking, I'd probably be drunk tonight, and it certainly makes sense that I'd be drunk on New Year's Eve, but because New Year's Eve is on a Saturday night, then obviously I would have justified starting my getting drunk tonight. And I'm really grateful that I'm not drunk tonight. I am more grateful than if you're new you will ever imagine, until perhaps you have been sober for a little short of 14 years. My life today is inwardly certainly better than it's ever been. There are exteriors over which I have no control that, if I did have control, I'd like to change some of them. But today I would say that on a regular basis there is an absence of intense anxiety that had always been there before. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had spent many years experiencing the kind of anxiety that I would say was like a herd of rats that were nibbling and gnawing away at me, my insides, on a regular basis. And by the time I got here, those mice had turned into big wharf rats. That's how I felt. I felt like I was being chewed up inside when I got here. And if you feel that way tonight, I'm here to tell you that in spite of the fact that it's a holiday weekend, and it's, if you're anything like me, it's a holiday weekend that you could probably turn into a very depressing experience for you if you were so inclined, you don't have to do that. It's going to be all right. You don't have to ever take another drink. You don't ever have to wake up again and feel remorse or guilt or shame about what you did the night before, whether you remember it or not. It can be all right for you. And the tab for that is to come back, to Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what, as Jack referred to, Jack number two. referred to as the committee of voices in your head that may tell you that this is not for you and all the rest of it. And I had to just take it on faith when I got here, and that wasn't easy. You know, I had nowhere else to go particularly. I didn't come here because I was looking for a good time. I didn't come here to get sober. I came here because I had turned my life into such a mess that I needed to at least look like I cared and come in here and regroup so that I could go back out and do what our book says is a futile thing, which is to control and enjoy my drinking. And I wasn't able to do that. Never been able to control and enjoy my drinking. And that's why I'm here. I said earlier that I wanted to thank Michelle for allowing me to participate in the meeting, and that's exactly what I'm doing tonight. I'm participating in this meeting. I happen to be participating in this meeting from behind the podium tonight, but whenever I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel as though I'm participating in that meeting in one of a number of ways, because I want AA to stay alive, and I want to do my part to keep it alive if I can. And sometimes my participation is that I just sit out there and I don't cause a disturbance. I don't distract the meeting. I don't disrupt the meeting. That might be my participation. My participation is to stack the chairs. I happen to do that at this meeting, which is one of the reasons I'm glad I'm talking tonight. It means I don't have to do it. My participation is to applaud when somebody takes their chip. Because if I don't, who will? To sing happy birthday with enthusiasm, because if I don't, who will? To go up and thank a speaker afterward, because if I don't, who will? To stay for the entire meeting, because if I don't, who will? And I need to do those things to keep Alcoholics Anonymous alive. And you might say, well, look, what if I hate the speaker? Am I supposed to applaud with enthusiasm if I hate the speaker? Well, I'll tell you a little trick I've been using for a long time. If you hate the speaker, you just pretend that he's a bug. You place him in the palm of your left hand. I promise you that nobody will know the difference. It's been quite a year. You know, it's actually marked not just, you know, in my life. I mean, we've had a number of things that have happened this year. I was thinking today we'd actually celebrated 25 years since the moon landing. It was back in July, where two astronauts dropped down to the moon and tried to maintain their equilibrium as they moved across its surface, and we all got to see that. I missed it. The reason for that, which ties in with why I'm here, is because I was busy trying to maintain my equilibrium as I was crawling down the hallway trying to find the toilet on that night. I wasn't in any institutions. I didn't go to jail. I don't have any scars on me. I don't have any kids I had because I was drunk that night. In a way, that makes me unfortunate, because I don't have reminders around me. I don't have any physical evidence of the kind of life I led when I was getting drunk, which is one of the reasons I have to come to these meetings, and I have to keep reviewing just what kind of a life I had. You know, there were a lot of things that I did in my life that I'm not proud of. They weren't particularly major things. They weren't things that were gonna get me arrested. But I've done things, you know, I've done things that have made me feel very, very small in my life. I remember one time I went to a Mayfair Market on Franklin Avenue in Hollywood, and I hadn't shaved. It was about 1:55. I was going in there to get my last, it was my last run for the night to get a bottle of Red Mountain wine or whatever it happened to be. I know it was a gallon of wine, and I went in there, and I felt very lonely when I went in there. And I'd been drinking by myself, and I didn't have a whole lot of people in my life during that particular period. And I went into this Mayfair Market, and I got that big jug of wine, and I was standing there in line, and the checker smiled at me. And my keen mind told me why she wanted me. Now, I didn't want to make my move in front of the other people in line, but I memorized your name tag. I started to get quite excited. I zipped home to the single apartment. It was not unlike many single apartments I lived in during my drinking. That was after 2 o'clock. It was an all-night market. They weren't selling any more booze, but I called. And I asked for Kathy. And they said, she's checking. She's busy. She can't come to your phone. And I said, well, this is of vital importance. Can you get her to the phone? And so they went and got her to the phone. And when I got on the phone with her, I said, hi, this is Jack. She didn't know what I was talking about. I needed to identify myself. I was just in there about 15 minutes ago. You smiled at me. I was in your check stand. She still didn't get it. I said, well, how's the guy with the jug of wine? Remember me? And she hung up on me. And that felt... Well, I was admiring these signs up here. I'm the one who actually wrote the text. I didn't make those signs, but I wrote the text. And we're trying to just keep the seating in here under control, and works fairly well, but. I don't know if any of you know that a lot of these meetings have what I would call seat pimps. There's a meeting over in Beverly Hills. There's a guy I know over there. I haven't seen him for a while, but these people are usually have a lot of sobriety. And this particular guy, he comes into a meeting kind of early, and he grabs 10 seats. And they're not for anyone in particular. Just gets the 10 seats, and this gives him a sense of some kind of power. And he gets to dispense and distribute and manage the fate of other people as they come in. And when they come in, he usually caters to the women that come in, particular type of woman that comes in, and if a couple of women, either the guy thinks he's a major D. A couple of women come in, and either, what do you need? A deuce right over here. Got a single? Anybody? I talked at that meeting a couple of years ago, very aware of this guy, and I talked about that from the podium, and they laughed about it. They laughed about seat pimping, as I was talking about it. And I looked down, and this guy was laughing right along with everybody else. He thought seat pimping was a funny thing. Thought it was hilarious. And then I went back to that meeting just as a tender subsequently. And this guy was still seat pimping. And I realized that the important part of that whole story is, it has nothing to do with him. It has to do with me. It has to do with my ego. Because somewhere in my sick mind, I thought that when I got up there and I talked like that, and that guy was sitting out there, that somehow in the middle of his laughter, he was going to go, wait a second. Today. It's about trying to get other people to do it the way that I think they ought to. That's my number one problem. And that when they don't do it the way that I want to, them to, they're against me. And one of the things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that they're not against me. That, as I've said many times, there is no anti-Jack squad. And I always thought there was. So I could always recognize a member of the anti-Jack squad, wherever I was, usually on the freeways. Some guy in front of me on the freeway with several lanes on either side, and I'm holding behind him, and he's going slow, and I know why, because he's trying to grind me. He doesn't... I don't know why. I don't know what his motive is. I just know what he's doing, and I'm back there, and the guy is going slow, and there's other ways to pass him. There's two lanes on each side, but I'm not going to do that because I want to know, why me? Why me? And I realize that I'm pretty powerless after a while, and I'm just going to pass the guy, right? But do you think I'm just going to let him off the hook when I pass him? Not in a million years. He's going to get to experience my scowl. And I give it to him as I pass him. And the thing that just blows my mind about one of these guys is that he has this brilliant ability to look as if he had no idea that he was doing this. And I've come to find out there's no anti-Jack squad. That people do for themselves, that everybody is the star of their own movie, and they want everybody else to be supporting players in their movie. And when they do these things in life, sometimes I get hurt. You know, a lot of that happens in my relationships with women. I had a woman who left me 6 times in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but that's painful. Because I had no control over that. You know, she left me 6 times. And I was just in a daze afterward. I mean, I was wandering around trying to figure out what in the world is going on here. How could she do this? How could she leave me 6 times? How could she leave me, the real Jack, 6 times. And afterward it became very clear, it's because I took her back 5 times. That's the only way that can happen. If you're in that kind of a relationship and you haven't reached 6 yet, you don't have to. Because that's the only way it can happen. So I have to realize that that woman was just doing what she thought would serve her in her deluded mind. And in the process, I got hurt. So there's no anti-Jack squad. There's just me trying to make life happen the way that I want it to. And whenever I'm doing that, I always end up disappointed. You know, my expectations always turn into upsets. That's very difficult. You know, it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to let go? How am I supposed to do what we talk about in AA? Turn it over. Well, I mean, what's that all about? Turn it over? Turn it over when... And this is a hostile world. It's hostile out there these days. It feels very safe in this room. But it's kind of hostile out there right now. You know, you watch the news, you see all kinds of terrible things going on. It's kind of scary. I don't know, maybe it was always that way. I don't know. But I never know when my emotions are going to kick in. Never know how to control things like that. I can only control what I do. You know, I sponsor people and they ask me how to stop this emotion or that thought, and I constantly am trying to tell them, you know, I don't know anything about stopping emotions or thoughts or making them go in different directions. The only thing I know is that I can choose my actions in spite of how I feel, and that's very important to me. You know, I never did that when I drank. And make no mistake, I drank. You know, I'm here tonight because when I was married and I was trying to stay off the sauce, my stepdaughter came to visit us for a short time. And she was about 16 and asked if, you know, she could have a margarita, just out of the clear blue. And of course, her mom said, hey, what are you talking about? And I said, well, wait a second here. You know, she's, you can't know how to fight off evil if you don't even know what it is. Let's make a batch. So I made a pitcher full of margaritas that night. And I poured one for my stepdaughter. You know, she had a little taste of it or whatever, and then I polished off most of the rest, which is, you know, not difficult to believe if you're in this room. And they told me the following information the next morning. What had happened was that during the night, apparently, I had gotten up and wandered into the main part of the house, and there was a big crash. And everyone ran out of their respective bedrooms to see what was going on. And what had happened is that I had taken the television set, which was sitting on a table about a foot and a half off the floor, big television, and tipped it over so that it landed on its screen, thinking that it was the lid of the toilet. And when they wandered out, it was, you know, I was standing there, and, hey, can I get a little privacy around here? And I peed into the guts of the television set. Which may sound like a wimpy story, but consider this. If it's true that water is a conductor of electricity, I could have been electrocuted. My problem is that when I take a drink of alcohol, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think I do. I always think I do. And my priorities are going to change right away. As soon as I take a drink of alcohol, my priorities change. My focus changes. You become unimportant if you're a loved one. You become of secondary importance. Trivialities become much more important than you. The very important things in my life become trivial, and the trivialities become important to me. That is how I can get into an argument, for instance, with my girlfriend's three-year-old for an hour. believe in it. Be convinced that indeed the last scoop of strawberry ice cream was mine. And if I'm at your home and you give me a drink of alcohol and my focus changes, doesn't matter what time of day it is, I want another drink. And if you are between me and that drink, you are the enemy. And I will do whatever I got to do to get that drink. You know, I will finesse and charm or whatever it is that I have to do. I will wait for you to leave the room. I'll go over to where I know that bottle is. And I won't just pour myself a second drink while you're out of the room. I'll take a few tokes off the bottle and then pour the second drink. And then when you come back and if you happen to catch me, I'll try to say something that's witty or charming to get off the hook, you know. And at some point, if I am so taken with alcohol and so drunk and so focused on what I want as opposed to anything that's of importance to you, and you're out of alcohol, and I start to investigate where there must be some in the house, and you tell me, well, there is that bottle we've been trying to hold on to for a special occasion, I will use all of my powers to try and convince you that this is the special occasion. Because that's what alcohol makes me do. And unfortunately, I got no way to combat it because after I've had those drinks, I feel pretty good. I feel okay. I feel like, hey, all of that stuff that was putting heat on me and pressure on me is seems relieved and unimportant somehow. That it's going to be okay. That it's going to be okay. Because I've taken these drinks. And other people who don't have this marvelous ability to take a drink and make things okay for themselves, regular type people, who have no way of escaping the kind of conflict and anxiety that I'm capable of feeling over pretty much nothing, have to face life head on, and that's what they did. All that time I was growing up, I drank for about 16, 17 years. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I looked around the people I knew out there, and I thought, oh my God, how'd they get so far ahead of me personally and professionally? This makes no sense. It took a while for me to understand that it makes complete sense. That for 16 or 17 years, I was going around in circles, over and over and over again, the same old story every day, you know, get drunk, pass out, wake up with remorse, pray to a higher power that I didn't believe in except in moments of panic, make promises to my loved ones that it wasn't going to happen again, believe those promises wholeheartedly, and then by that afternoon somehow rationalize that it was perfectly okay to take one drink and go through the whole thing again and again and again until I ate up 17 years of my life. And yet there was a voice in my head throughout at some point or another that always said, you got to stop this. You know, if you're new tonight, maybe you have that. Maybe you've heard the voice that I'm talking about. The voice that says, I got to stop this. I can't do this. I'm eating up. You know, I'm seeing the faces of my loved ones turn on me. And I can't stand it. I can't stand myself. And then I can't stand myself so much that I got to have another drink. That's how much I can't stand myself. I can't stand myself so much that I can't stand to even think about how I feel about myself. So I got to take another drink. And so that's the kind of life I led for 16 or 17 years. And when I wandered in here, like I said, I just wanted to control and enjoy my drinking. I was coming off of a divorce. I'm certain. In fact, I can sense this. Maybe it's my 14 years. I don't know. I sense that there is a relationship disorder in the room someplace. what I had when I got here. I was going through a divorce. And that hurts. That hurts a lot, you know. And I came in here and as Jack number two was saying, I didn't understand all that stuff about we're gonna love you back to sobriety. Just gonna love you. You're talking about you're gonna love me. You don't know anything about me. I know what you're gonna do. You're gonna invade my home. That's why you're giving me your phone number and encouraging me to call you so you can eventually find out what my number is and where I live so that you can invade my life. You can start coming. You can drop by. That's what you want to do, isn't it? You want to drop by with your cookies and your casseroles and your do-goodery. These people gave me their cards, their business cards, and their phone numbers, as perhaps some of you have experienced in your meetings of alcoholics. I was giving these cards, and pleaded with me to call them if I felt bad. If I felt like taking a drink, certainly call any time, day or night. Any time, day or night. Makes no difference. I remember thinking, you know, well, where were you when I was drinking? I would have done that. I would have called you any time, day or night. Nobody wanted me to do that then. You want me to do that. You want me to call you any time, day or night. Well, okay, I take the card. I don't really feel that comfortable about it. In fact, I actually feel a little bit of contempt towards you for, you know, all the Bambi smiles and the love and all that. And so I take, you know, these cards that you give me with your good wishes, and maybe I go to another meeting and I pass your cards out to newcomers. These people want you to call them, you know, anytime, night or day. In fact, I have been told that most of them have the swing shift, so after midnight is best. And I sure don't want to get to know anybody, but you know, I feel so bad at some point that whatever you tell me to do, I will do. I will pick up people and take them to meetings. I will stack chairs. I will do whatever you tell me because I'm a con man. And when life has gone bad for me, I'm ready, willing, and able to do the stuff that it takes. But unfortunately, what happens to me after that is then I start to feel pretty good. You know, I do these things that we are told to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I open myself up to people as much as I can, and I do these things like, you know, set up meetings and break down meetings or whatever it is. And I start to feel better. And then my nature is, let somebody else do it now. I got mine. I got what I wanted. Let somebody else do it now. Now, one of the things I've learned in AA, and I thank my first sponsor for this, is I have been taught that whether or not I'm feeling good or bad, that I do the action anyway, that I am a battleship in peacetime. And that when I'm feeling good, it's peacetime, but I got to do the drills on my battleship anyway. Because I always got to be ready for the war. That is inevitable. There's going to be a war in my life, and I got to be ready for it. So I got to keep up my drills when I'm feeling good. I got to do all the things that I do when I'm not feeling good. And that's kind of a drag. That's dreary. There isn't anything particularly exciting about, you know, some of these things that we do around here. And a lot of people avoid doing them. And you know, that's their prerogative. I don't know that those things keep me sober. I don't know that if they keep anxiety out of my life. But I know this, ever since I've been doing them, I've been sober. And I don't have a lot of anxiety in my life these days. I'm kind of superstitious. I don't know if there's a connection there. But I'm going to continue to do these things, hopefully, so that I can continue to feel that absence of anxiety that has become my first and foremost benefit of Alcoholics Anonymous after staying sober. it's not about what happens on the exterior anymore. You know, I'm not even talking about that stuff we say about inside job, you know. I don't know. There's just certain things that we hear in AA meetings that I get tired. Am I the only guy who's sick and tired of hearing people say they're sick and tired of being sick and tired? You know? I want to feel somewhat serene. Now, what did I used to think serenity was before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, what I thought it was I thought that it was sitting near a babbling brook after I parked my car down the road a piece, and then I just kind of sat under a tree and some butterflies fluttered about and some birds were singing and there was a nice breeze and the flowers smelled good, and I got to just sit there and be one with it all. And unfortunately, after about 2 minutes, my first thought is, I wonder if that bitch is really with her girlfriends. I mean, that's what she said, right? I don't know, though. They're probably ripping off my car right now, down by the road. And I know why that guy wants to see me Monday morning at work, because he's going to fire me. See, that's what my mind tells me. And if you're new today and you've got this New Year's Eve coming up, you know, I strongly suggest that if you're anything like me, you don't sit home and listen to the hum of the refrigerator. Because that can be very tough. I can't be in a room by myself. It's not a good idea. I tried this one year on, I'd done a bunch of different things, certainly on New Year's Eve, and, you know, gotten drunk and partied many times. And after I got to AA, I thought, you know, I'm going to really do it different this year. I'm going to really do it tame, and I'm going to really do it soft. I'm going to stay home, and I am going to take stock of the year. Yeah, if there had been a beam in the house and a nice length of rope, who knows? My problem today, my frustrations that I have, my anxieties, my depression, is usually generated by my own thoughts. I usually generate these notions in my head. I mean, my God, I've been through so much pain and so much suffering. And it was all in my head most of the time. I mean, when I take stock of my sobriety, there's so very little that's been bad about it. But I have gone through all of these emotions. And that's what happens to me when I'm left to my own devices. So, you know, if you're new tonight, and I know we have some new people here. It's New Year's Eve tomorrow night, and, you know, I'll make, once again, my regular New Year's resolution. I do it every year, trying to be optimistic, same resolution. I'm not going to let human beings irritate me this year. And that generally stays intact, and, you know, till I leave the house or go to my first AA meeting of the week. I'm not going to set big goals for 1995, you know, because that's what I did when I drank. I set these big goals, and then I'd, you know, never get anywhere near them, and I'd feel like taking a drink. So my goals are a lot smaller now. It's going to be New Year's Eve weekend. And if you're new, or if you're old and fading away, I strongly suggest that you stay out of dim, dark, alone places and go to meetings, go with friends, go play Pac-Man. But don't stay home and think about it, because if you're anything like me, you're just going to get depressed. It's going to be all right. It's really going to be okay. If you're out there tonight and you're suffering and you don't think it's going to be okay, I'm telling you, it's going to be okay. You're going to get past this. This is not a cave, it's a tunnel. You may not see the light now, but you will. And you're going to get past this, and it's going to be okay. You just got to have a little faith. Don't listen to your head. Don't listen to your head. Stay close to some of these people who gave you their phone numbers. Use those phone numbers. And when you get real emotional, just let it pass over you like a wave at the ocean. You know, don't act on it. So what I got to do today is not act on my intense emotions, because when I do that, I always regret it. And remember that, you know, New Year's is just 24 hours long. It's going to be over, and everything's going to be fine, and I hope to see you all back here next week.